All right, tonight we embark on the quest that mankind has been searching for millennia, on how to understand the female mind. There's a great scene at the end of Back to the Future. You know that scene where Doc Brown comes back and the end of the first one, and he's about to take Marty and says, you know, we're going on a mission to, you know, try to, you know, discover the impossible, you know, try to understand women. So men have been trying to understand women for time immemorial. Some succeed, many fail. So we'll do the best that we can to paint a picture here. I think the women got a lot of the last year, so now they know you guys like a drum, so don't worry about it. It's all good. Now I need you to have the same perspective. I'm going to start with this. You know, as much as tools are important when it comes to a marriage, knowing, you know, how to react to this or what to do in this situation. Any more? Yeah. I think a framework is just as important. We have to have a perspective as to what the other person is thinking and feeling so that we have a chance to then understand it. And, you know, sometimes I look at relationships as God's big practical joke, because you take men and women who think so differently and expect them to coexist. And the truth is, what marriage really is the slow process of a man trying to understand and thinking like a woman so that he can understand where she's coming from and relate to her, and she beginning to understand how a man is thinking so she can relate to him. That's a very long process with many bumps along the road. And what I tell, certainly that tell the husbands, is you can know exactly what you're supposed to do, you'll probably still only do it about half the time, because we just have our natural way of handling things, our natural way of doing things, and we fall back on those, on that mentality, on that perspective. But the more we think about it, and the more we realize what we did wrong, and the more that we think through why one reaction of ours worked and one didn't, it becomes closer to second nature, and hopefully over time, it becomes less and less difficult. And that's the goal. The goal in a marriage is that after 10 years, it's less difficult than it was in the beginning, because you've slowly gone through the process of understanding where she's coming from. So, where is she coming from? So, I started the women's share and the men's share with the same Rambam, and I think it's important to start off with. Rambam says in Hilchos Isher's Perek Tedvav, Halacha Yutet, V'kein sevu chachamim she'adam echabed et ishto yoter migufo v'ohovaki gufo v'in yesh lo mamon marbe betovata kefia mamon. So our sages have taught us that a man must honor his wife more than himself and love him more than himself. V'in yesh lo mamon, if he has money, he has to give, you know, he has to provide for her, not just the basics, but he has to make sure to give her based on what he has. He can't cause her to fear him. He has to talk to her in a calm manner. And he can't be upset. And he can't always be upset. He has to be happy. So probably we set the tone in our homes, and we each set our tones. And the way we act and the way we look and the way we feel plays out with everybody else. But as opposed to the men, so that has the Rambam describe how the woman should treat the man. She should respect him. She should be in awe of him. And do what he asks. And she should look at him like a king. I'm sure you guys already have that already. I don't have to talk about. So your wives already look at you like a king. Yes. Well, I was very, very happily. They were all ready to treat you as king, so we're good. Like I said, we're good. I had a heart to heart. So the way I describe this is a difference in mentality. We have to ask ourselves, what do we want in a relationship? What's our goal? When we go into a marriage, we want something out of this. Yes, we want to be selfless, and yes, we want to love someone. But what do we expect? How do we expect this is going to help make our lives better? So we each assume that's going to, But men and women want something different out of it, emotionally. For men, they want respect. They want a wife who's going to respect him, look up to him, you know, maybe not treat him like a king, that would be nice. But at the very least, they want someone who's going to respect them and feel like he's, you know, he's a substantial person who I respect and I look up to on some level. That's important to him. And we talked a lot, that I spoke to a lot about in the women's class, that how important it is for a wife to respect her husband and for him to feel that way. For her, it's not about that quite as much. It's about being cherished. That's a very hard word to define. What does it mean to be cherished? So he wants her to desire her. She wants him to desire her. She wants him to be to appreciate her, to, you know, quote unquote, lift her on a pedestal. And it's something that it's a hard thing for a man to relate to because it's not his natural way of thinking. But she wants him to honor her more than himself. And that's going to play out a number of different ways. I know right now that's very vague. We're going to get into more specifics. But I want to start off with that difference in model. It's respect versus cherish. Okay, and that plays out differently. Because cherishing means a number of different things along the way throughout life that you're going to do so that she begins to feel that way. But ultimately, that's what she wants in a relationship. She wants to be in a relationship where her husband desires her and cherishes her. And he wants to be in a relationship where he feels that he is respected and looked up to. And those two emotions, you know, they do play off each other very well, but they have to be built up. Okay, any questions on that before I go on? Yeah.
In terms of the
Yeah.
I guess in terms of listed sources that are listed, how much of these are necessarily applicable to a relationship in the modern age? I mean, the Rambam also says that being charitable, a woman should be allowed to leave her house like once a month. Obviously, situations have changed since the Rambam wrote about the nature of
relationships. 100%. Look. Yes, and it's not just the Rambam. There are many Rishonim who say similar types of things. I would say it's a jumping off point. I will try to take, am I picking and choosing on some level? Yeah, of course I am. I mean, I'm not going to take the things that are not applicable. I'm going to try to take what is applicable and use that as a jumping off point to kind of a modern context. And, you know, you'll let me know how well I do with it. Now, some very interesting approaches to the klalas of Chava. So Chava's klalas as follows: Paragimel, Bereshit Paragimel, Pesach Tet Zayin. El Yisha Amar Harbeh Harbeh Itzvonech VeHeronech. So she'll feel pain in childbirth and in labor, in childbirth. Betzev Tal Dibanim, and it'll be painful raising children. It's difficult. It's complicated. It's exhausting. But this, I want to focus on the last part of the pasuk. Well, ishech teshukatech, you will desire your husband, v'hu yimshal bach, and he will rule over you. Okay. Now, forget the Rambam. Let's understand the pasuk. What does this mean? What does this mean? She will desire him, but he will rule over her. In what way does she desire him, and yet he rules over her? So how do you understand this pasuk? How do you understand this in a modern context? Yeah.
He takes control of the way he kind of sees fit, and she respects his strength.
Okay, that's one perspective for sure. The Lava Shem look at it that way. So first has an interesting perspective. First says that it means that through most of human history, women have been dependent on men. There's a power imbalance. And the power imbalance is based on he's the one who makes the money. So ultimately, certainly when she had children, she could no longer earn a living. She was dependent on him. And that's why we had to install the ksuba. And that's why we had to stop. That's why Rabbeinu Gershom disallows get against her will, because there's a natural power imbalance in a relationship. Forget the get. Just and naturally, throughout most of human history, when women weren't earning money. That's how we understand it. I want to take a little different perspective on it. And that is, There's an imbalance in what they want out of the relationship. You know, it's a good line I've heard. I think it's a good line is that a woman goes into marriage expecting the man to change and he never does. And man goes into marriage hoping she never changes and she always does. Okay. A man goes into marriage with pretty simple goals. I love this woman. I find her attractive. I like being around her. I could see myself with this person for a long time. And that works. She looks at the marriage as a much more complicated process. We're going to develop a strong bond. We're going to be, you know, we're going to be inseparable. We're going to share everything together. I'm going to help him grow. I'm going to iron out his rough edges. I'm going to help change him. She's got like a list of goals going into this marriage and a list of things she wants out of this relationship. She wants something from this relationship that he's not always able to deliver, or at least not naturally able to deliver. And there's a certain frustration that women have in relationships because they want something that he doesn't necessarily want. Not that he's against it. He just doesn't see the need for it. My life, you know, I just, you know, this is a part of my life. I've got my job, and I've got my friends, and I've got my marriage. And it's one of the things in my life, and it's an important thing in my life. He doesn't look at this as has to define me. You know, some, but it's interesting. You know, like in the back of cars, they had those like little stickers, like the dog and the kids, you know, like the silhouettes, I guess, you know, the
little white stickers.
Little white stickers, right? You'll never find a man with that on his back of his car, right? Only, it's always the mom who's got that in her car. You'll never have a dad who, you know, mom will have or grandma will have the necklace or the bracelet with a birthstone representing each child, each grandchild. You'll never see a father or a grandfather have something like that represented on their body or in you know, something. Because men don't define themselves quite the same way. That their family doesn't define them in quite the same way. It's a part of who we are. But it doesn't define them in the same way. For a woman, it's much more of a defining nature of who they are. And certainly, you know, since women end up spending so much more time and effort in the home, raising the kids, it really ends up becoming much more of a defining characteristic of who they are. So there's a certain natural frustrations that every relationship has, that she wants something in this relationship that he doesn't naturally want. In that sense, I think she desires him. She wants this relationship, and he kind of controls where that goes, because she's always going to be longing for it. And he really kind of decides how far this goes. Because if he just pulls back, it doesn't go anywhere. So he has to decide to want what she wants. She naturally wants it. He has to decide to get there. And there's a certain power imbalance in that as well. A certain power imbalance in the fact that she naturally wants this close relationship. And he vacillates between wanting to be close, wanting more independence, wanting to be close, wanting more independence. So there's a certain power imbalance in that as well. And that can be very frustrating. So, for men, there is a bit more of an opt-in into the relationship. We are choosing to be close, to want to be close. And that's a choice that we have to consciously make. Because, as you see, I'm sure, with many relationships, there are many men who remain very distant throughout their entire lives. With their wives, with their kids, with their families. Not as if they're never around, but there's a certain distance. Because there's a desire for independence, a desire to not feel too encumbered, too dependent, too attached. And a man in a relationship has to actively decide to allow themselves into this relationship. You know, Dave Barry has a great book called Dave Barry's Guide to Guys. You know Dave Barry, the comic writer? So this book called The Guide to Guys, and he's got this whole introduction that you have to constantly remind men that they're in a relationship. You know, by the way, we've got four kids, we've been married for 20 years, we're in a relationship, just... So please remember my birthday. Just do me that. Just do me that favor. But there's a certain truth to that. So how do we do that? So the first thing that we have to do is the next source on true commitment. So the Rama, this is based on the Gemara, and Suva says as follows. Onah hamur b'torah. So the husband has an obligation of onah. What does onah mean? So kol ish v'ish ki v'kochol kafi malach. So ketha b'nei adam... Habrim, harachim, vanugim, she'en lahem malacha, she'mechshalek kocham, el ochlin, v'shotin, v'yoshim, b'tayen, onasen b'chol laila. So, depending on your job, determines how often you have to be with your wife. If you've got a job that's more flexible, it's every night. If it's less flexible, it's less often. It's once a week, once a month, whatever it is, depending how much you're traveling. So typically we understand this as being about, you know, how much are they, how sexually active is this couple? And Herschel Shatter had made a very good point on this concept that expands it. And the term ona typically doesn't mean sex. Ona usually means time. And a lot of different areas in halacha, it means a time or a time frame. And Oshatar explains this means that it's not that they have to have sex every night because he has a job that gets him that he's home every night. It means that he has an obligation to spend time with her. That's the obligation. That a husband has a chiyuv to spend time with his wife. Real time. To be actively engaged in her life. To actively be around. And that is his responsibility. And there's a medrash that calls it ol isha. That there's a certain responsibility that comes to being a husband. And the biggest responsibility you have is just to be around. And while there's a temptation to always be busy with something, and I've got to do this, and I've got to go that, and you know, there's this thing going on, my friend wants to go out, I've got to watch this show, I'm behind on this show, whatever, I got to watch this game, it's really important. If the Knicks win 10 straight, they might get back in the playoff race, I got to catch this game. So we feel like we have to always do something else. But our first part of the responsibility of being a husband is to make sure we shut other things down and spend time with our wives. Yes?
Why was polygamy allowed? It seemed like that would sort of defeat the...
Hey, that means you got to spend time with multiple wives. You just put a second ole on you.
That's the entire
situation. Right, exactly. Yeah, you want Rachel and Leah fighting over you? Go crazy, you know. Enjoy, you'll go crazy, but go ahead, enjoy it. You know, I think that's why polygamy kind of petered out just naturally because it's a lot of responsibility. Now look, of course, the amount of time you have for things will determine. So look, certain people travel a lot, certain people work late, it's all relative. But you have to make sure that you have, you know, quality time. You have to make sure, and I would say every day, at least some quality time. And quality time means, you know, you're not watching a game out of the corner of your eye, she's talking and you're pretending like you're listening and not in your head a lot. And quality time doesn't mean that, you know, you're checking Twitter as you're listening. It means you give her that time, that respect, which is very, very important for her. And that's, you have to be willing to make that commitment. Again, the more the better, depending on your circumstance. So I think that's important point number one. Communication. Okay, so another, the Gemara in Erevin also gives another kind of play on this. The klala of Chava. V'hu yim shabach. What does it mean? He rules over her. Melamed she isha tovas belev ve'ish tova bepet. Zoi mid de tova benashim ki kamrinan demartze artsu kamay. That certain things she would be better at expressing, certain things she won't. So the power here is that men are the initiators in the sexual act, typically. She will allude to it, he will be more aggressive. And then, you know, that's another power imbalance that men and women typically have. He's the one who makes the call. He's the one who makes the first move. That's a power imbalance. She's got to wait. She's got to wait for a man to make a move. So, in a more general sense, though, this gets to a little bit about communication. You know, I talked to the women about how women expect men to read their minds and to know what they think before they think it. And how that's a very dangerous assumption to make. Men barely know what they're thinking about, what they're thinking, let alone someone else is thinking. And in every relationship, there's a responsibility in both sides to try to meet in the middle. So a woman's responsibility is to be clear with what they want from their husband, as clear as possible and as direct as possible, without subtly alluding to it, without mentioning it, hoping he understands what she means. But there's a responsibility for the man to pick up on things and to try to understand what she's thinking and what she's feeling. Now, one of the difficulties in marriage is that men and women communicate very differently and express themselves very differently. And this is important for men to realize that, you know, men struggle with female emotion. And we talked a lot about that in last year, that men get very frazzled by emotion, certainly by female emotion. We get over, you know, a woman crying is like, oh my God, what do I do with this? Now what do I do? And very often, a man's thinking when a woman's emotional is, how can I get this to stop as quickly as possible? Because I don't like this. Please, What's the magic thing I can do or say to get this to stop? Because this is just, I don't know what to do, and this is just making me crazy. So it's important for men to just realize that women get in and out of emotion very quickly. Just because a woman is emotional doesn't mean she's really that upset. It's a very hard thing for men to wrap their heads around, because for a man to cry or to be angry, typically it takes a lot to get there. He's much more hesitant to get to that point. Women get in and out of emotion very quickly. So don't be frazzled by emotion. Don't be frazzled when she's upset. Don't be frazzled if she needs to vent. Because very often, all she needs is that opportunity to have that emotional release. Women need emotional releases much more than men do. Men often release emotionally just by, you know, going in, you know, we call it going into the cave. That's John Gray's term. You know, I need an hour to sit there and like go on the computer and not talk to anybody, not do anything else. I want to watch a game and clear my head, and then I can talk. Right now, I'm too frustrated, and I need to like unwind. I need to go in a cave and disappear, and then I'll come out. I'll clear my head. Women clear their heads by talking things out. That's how they clear their heads. They don't clear their heads by watching, you know, a game for 2 hours. They clear their heads by talking things out. And it's important for men to realize that often all they want from you is to understand where they're coming from. Because when women talk to each other, what they're doing is they're connecting emotion. The goal of one woman is to reach the emotional plane of the other woman. And it's a successful conversation, not when they've resolved something, not when they've accomplished anything. When both sides have reached the same emotional plane. And what she wants is when she's expressing frustration about something at work or about something, whatever it is, she wants him to care as much as she does. That's all she wants. She wants him to care as much as she cares. And if he cares as much as she cares, the conversation was a success. And if you remind yourself over and over again, all she wants from me now is to know that I care as much as she cares, because if I care as much as she cares, then I must love her in her mind. She's thinking, he must love me because he cares as much as I do. And if he can't, if he doesn't care as much as I do, well, why doesn't he care? I care. He should care as well. Now, you're not always going to really care as much as she does, but you have to learn some tools to get, to make it, be sincere about it, but learn the tools to make it seem like you definitely really care. So how do you do that? So it's not enough to nod your head and say, The magic words over and over again are, that must be really hard. Wow, that sucks that you went through that. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Boy, that must have been terrible. Because you're just, all you're doing is relating emotion to her emotions. Because women live in the world, for women, emotion is reality much more than men. So for example, a woman will say the following: I feel beautiful, or I don't feel beautiful, I feel fat. So for men, that doesn't make sense. What do you mean you feel fat? Are you fat? Are you not fat? Let's figure it out, right? I'm not saying you want to have that conversation. But you don't have that conversation. But, so women will express their reality in terms of how they feel. I feel this, therefore that is my reality. Men won't discuss that. Men say, this is a reality, I feel this way about that reality. It's a different way of thinking. And what she wants is for him to understand her reality. Her reality is her emotion. I feel this, so he must feel this. Now, it's not completely realistic, because he won't often feel that. But by understanding that's what she wants, it makes it much easier. Any questions? I see some listening faces and some confused faces a little bit. That make sense? Okay. So, you know, I know a lot of people talk about that, you know, don't try to fix everything. It's more than just don't try to fix it. It's all she wants very often is, you know, is for you to feel that. Now, what we do in our relationship very often, my wife and I, is it helps me to ask in the beginning, okay, what do you want from this conversation? What do you want? Do you want to vent? Okay, great. Now I can get myself in the head. Now, sometimes she does want to talk it out to come up with a solution. Sometimes she does want to figure something out. Sometimes it's venting. I need to know for myself, if it's a venting session, okay, I get myself in that mindset. If it's not, I get myself in that mindset. it helps me to ask that question. Okay, what are we doing here? Then I know what to do. Because naturally, men don't think, well, my job now is to connect with her emotions and leave it at that. And that's all she wants. Because for her, that's how she vents.
Yeah. To find out 5 or 10 minutes in just that thing, you're already worked up and upset about something, and she's telling you that now you understand what she wants. You know, where you're going with it may not be where she's going.
Give me an example.
Like if she's venting,
right,
and you think that she's trying to solve a problem, then you're analyzing what she's saying to try and come up with a solution,
right,
which just annoys her because then you're not listening to her the way she wants you to.
Yeah, always assume the first thing you assume is she wants me to connect to her emotionally. If she wants something more, she'll tell you. Assume the default position, she wants me to connect with her emotionally. That's it. She's complaining about something at work, something her boss did, something her coworker did. She is not asking for anything more than hear me out. And magically, after the conversation, she doesn't care anymore. It doesn't bother her anymore. Nothing is fixed. So again, for men, that's just such a foreign concept. What did we just do? But for her, that is her reality. Yeah.
So, it's like one of the things we do is it goes on for it's like...
hours on end?
Well, it may not be hours, but it gets to a certain point where she repeats herself. You're trying to connect, but it drives you crazy. You just have to live with it. One. Two... sort of a little different is what if she's venting but she's saying a lot of lashon hara and stuff like that, and you're like, okay, let me pick it up, I want to roll that.
Okay, two very good questions. Two very different questions. The first question, do you have to sit there forever and listen? I'll tell you that one thing that's helpful is if you can, and sometimes this takes time to get there, Try to define the time of the conversation in the beginning. That doesn't always work, especially in the beginning. But, if you can say, look, I'm just really ADD. I'm an ADD kind of... I can sit for 15 minutes and really give you my all. I'm just telling you, I don't care what we're talking about after 15 minutes. It gets hard for me. So I really want to be there for you. I just don't want to do it in a way that's going to fail. So, can we go at it for 15 minutes? And, try to kind of set those parameters. You have to say very carefully. You have to say in a way that makes it seem like, not that you don't care, that's just my reality. I just can't, you know me, I can't, 15 minutes is my limit. After that, I don't want...
The wife's going to be talking in this class. How many orals are there? They're putting you in the water in that show.
ADD. I'm not saying you use that. I'm just saying, but reality, you say, look, I want this to be productive. And the reality is, 15 minutes, I can really give you my all. But I don't want this to become counterproductive, or, not like if it's a serious issue that you've got to really work out, different story. Yeah. But if it's something that's more benign, right. As far as Lashon Hara, you can try to say, I wouldn't, seriously, maybe I'm a bad rabbi for saying this. In the moment, don't say, hey, that's Lashon Hara. Don't do it. Actively say, I'm not going to listen to it. I'm not going to believe it necessarily. And maybe in the future conversation, after the conversation's over, say, hey, next time, could we just maybe not, give me that much detail? Or just don't tell me the names, because it doesn't matter all that much. Hey, tell me my coworker. Tell me my friend. Maybe if it's her mother, it's different. But
would that be a good reason to shut down the conversation? Well, it's Lashon Hara.
No, don't shut down the conversation. No, don't do that. But you can try to say, maybe can I get a little less details? I just don't want to, don't tell me the name. I don't need to know. And then over time, you can change the tone of the conversation. But these things take time to kind of adjust, and you have to kind of work together on it. Once she trusts that you are willing to listen to her, then she'll give you a little bit more space. She'll give you a little more space time-wise, and she'll give you a little bit more space in that, okay, he's trying to help make the conversation something he's a little more comfortable with, or we should both be more comfortable with. And then you get a little bit more slack, and then you can help move that together. Look, it's like any kind of musr, You have to give mussar in a way that's going to be productive. And if the person's not ready to hear it, don't give the mussar. But slowly but surely, try to move it in a way that becomes more productive. That's what I would say. Okay.
Women and their looks.
Okay. Now, there's a very interesting distinction. You know, in Chazal, in Tanakh, certainly in Chumash, Chumash has no problem saying that women are beautiful. Right? The Medrash says Esther is beautiful. And on the third page, the Chumash says that Sarah was beautiful, and Rivka was beautiful, and Rachel was beautiful. And the whole question is, was Leah beautiful, and what does it mean that her eyes were soft? Doesn't mean she wasn't beautiful. Doesn't mean she was crying. It's a big discussion, right? Now, how good looking were Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? I don't know, right? They could have been, you know, most gorgeous guys in the world. We have no idea. And this is actually pervasive. This is a thought that really runs throughout Judaism. The Gemara says in Darim, the daughter of Caesar said to Rabbi Shimon ben Chanina, "How could such a beautiful Torah be stored in such an ugly vest like yourself?" He replied, "What do you store your wine in? Wooden barrels," he responded. He said, "That's what everyone does, but your royalty, you should store it in vessels made of gold and silver." She agreed and stored the wine in gold and silver. She was shocked to see that the wine had spoiled. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chanina said to her, "It is the same way with Torah. If it is found in a good-looking person, it becomes spoiled. But weren't there good-looking people who became great Torah scholars? Yes, but if they hadn't been good-looking, they would have been much greater." So there's this idea that for men, being good-looking is a negative. For women, being beautiful is a positive. Very strong double standard. Why is there this double standard? And there's actually many halachot. You know, the idea of a man acting like a woman, many of those things are, well, so Yosef, right, so Yosef is taken to task because he cared about his hair, he cared about how he looked. And he had, and for him, being good looking was an issayon, it was a challenge, because now Eishes Potiphar is trying to seduce him. So why is there this distinction? And look, in society, we're all well aware that society is much more obsessed and interested in female beauty than in men's looks. So, you know, you could say it's, well, because men are attracted to women based more on beauty, and therefore that's why society thinks that way. But it's not true. Okay, let me ask this question. If I would ask who is more obsessed with sex, men or women, what would the answer be? Right? Everyone would say men. Okay. But what if you look at sex differently? Meaning, what if a woman's concern about how she looks is a sexual experience for her? Now who cares more about sex, men or women? Right? Well, considering that society, that women are very concerned about how they look, then that changes the whole equation. That, see, we think that men are more into sex because men are the instigators of sex. But for women, sex is not about it's not about chasing, it's about being chased. For women, the sexual experience is about being chased, about being desired. That for her is the sexual experience. And that's we have to wrap our heads around that. So for example, look at the last source of the Gemara in Yuma. So the Gemara in Yuma says that Amar Yosi Bovarei Shiloki Midas Akadosh Baruch Hu Midas Baser Vedam Midas Baser Vedam Makni Det Chavero Yoni Molachayav. So people are different. Hashem is different than people. How so? That the way people are, if you punish someone, right, you want to destroy them. But Akadosh Baruch Hu, I don't care. Hashem's not like that. Kalata Nachash Ole Legag Mizinot Avimo Yori Lamata Mizinot Avimo. That Hashem curses the snake by saying that the snake will be lowly to the ground, but there is a benefit to that as well, because now its food is right wherever it is. Killed Kenan, Ochamashi Rabba, okay, killed Isha, Hakol Ratzin Achareha. And what's the, he curses women, but what's the bracha for women? That all chase after her, that men chase after her. The blessing for women is that men chase after them. And for women, that's a sexual experience.
That's a blessing, but also a curse. They're cursed, but within the curse is a blessing. So women are cursed, in the curse that we mentioned earlier, but the blessing they got within the curse was that men will chase after them. And that, therefore, we have to realize women want to be chased after. It's a sexual experience for them to be pursued, to want, and they want to be pursued. Therefore, it's important for men to realize this, because it's very important for a woman to feel that her husband is attracted to her, and for him to acknowledge that. You'd never hear a man say, "I don't feel like having sex tonight because I feel ugly, I feel fat." Meaning, the way we look is not relevant to the sexual experience. If the woman wants to have sex, then obviously things are going fine, but I'm not worried about anything. But for a woman, it's hard for her to be sexual if she doesn't feel good about her own looks. Because for her, the sexual experience, part of the sexual experience is being beautiful, is being desired by the other person. If she doesn't feel beautiful or worthy of desire, it's hard for her to feel sexual. So, it's very important for the man to constantly make her feel beautiful, to compliment her looks. And it seems silly, and it seems like, well, aren't we past this already? We're married. No, you're never past this. Because for her, that is a sexual experience. Just as, you know, is if she said to him, you know, we're married, you know, we don't really have to have sex anymore. Aren't we past this already? So, no, this is a constant process. So, for men, you have to constantly be engaged in the process of making her feel beautiful, complimenting her, and making sure she realizes that's how you think and that's how you feel. And the more you're saying that, the more she's feeling that, the better it is. And it might seem silly, but the idea of being chaste, buying her gifts, buying her flowers, getting things before Shabbos, all these little things matter to her because she still wants to be chaste. She still wants to be pursued. She still wants to be courted. A woman never loses that. She always wants that feeling. And if a man is constantly doing that, she constantly feels pursued. It's exciting. She feels desired. She's more excited about the relationship, and she's more sexual. And that all is intertwined. So a man has to realize that the more those things he's doing, the things he was doing when he was dating, when he's trying to convince her to like him in the first place, the more of those things he continues to do, the more he'll maintain that feeling, which is very important for her. And when she feels that way, she reciprocates back to him. So don't lose that sense. Don't lose that touch. Because when you lose that, you're losing a really core part of what attraction is all about. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Any questions or comments?
I was saying that you were flipped on that, which is that even, you were saying that the curse was a blessing, saying, but also part of that fact that women are chased is a curse within itself. Is, you know, working in the field, seeing feeding disorders, body image.
Right. Right.
And then the idea that, my question to you is more like, it's a famous question, but what's the right answer to how do I look in this dress?
You give me that.
I mean, it simply would sound like amazing or perfect. You'd never look better, you know.
Yeah, you say that every time, yeah. There's no question. Every time. And, well, you know what? It's not true.
Don't oversell.
In the beginning, you say that a lot. But if she feels confident, and this is true for both sides, when you feel confident in a relationship, that there's trust and that you know the person thinks you're beautiful, you know the person loves you, you know they're attracted to you, so then they're not as nervous. Because people have a lot of fear in relationships, okay? And they have fear, especially in the beginning of a relationship, a fear that the other person will not love me, a fear that they'll discover I'm not the person they think I am, that my flaws will come out. And those fears are kind of ever-present, especially in the beginning. So people are much more sensitive the first. And in the beginning, I mean like the first 5 to 10 years of a relationship. I don't mean like the first 6 months you're dating. It takes time for us to feel the confidence to really come out of our shells completely. And there's always a little bit that needs to come out, slowly but surely. And to feel confident that the other person is fully behind you and fully supports you. And for women, fully desires you. So in the beginning, you have to be a lot more sensitive. Because she's nervous. That's why, for example, you know, I didn't do this yet, but the Shulchan Aruch says on the last page here that Kala Koshal Shemiyum Mataris Lechotz Paneha, that a woman, the first 30 days she's married, she's allowed to wash her face in Yom Kippur. We can't wash in Yom Kippur. What do you mean? So Mishnah Berurah says, Achin is okay, she looks like al baila, so she doesn't discuss her husband. Because she's really concerned that her husband will find her unattractive. And that emotional need is so important that we're willing to bend halacha for it. But you don't bend halacha for something if it's just like, okay, well, how come you're being so vain? Don't be so vain. She's not being vain. Women are not vain when they care about how they look. That is an essential part of their identity. It helps define them and defines them as a woman, as a sexual being. So we have to respect that and understand that. But when you understand that and you help build that up, she gains more confidence, you gain more confidence, and after 8 to 10 years, if she asks you, do I look fat in this dress, you can be honest, because she wants you to be honest, because she's not worried that you're insulting her, because she knows that you how you really feel.
If she tries on a hat, and you don't particularly like the way it is, it's better to say, oh, this one, and she wears that hat for every weekend, thinking you like it, and you're sitting there going, oh, not that hat again. Or to say something along the lines of, like, look, you look amazing, but that hat doesn't do you justice.
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. I mean, you don't have to be, you don't have to sound like an idiot. I mean, you know, if, as long as it's reasonable, you know. But if you're if she feels confident that you think she's beautiful and you read it, then you've got more, you know.
You have to read her reaction.
Well, that's always true.
Yeah. You say that hat, and she's like, you know.
No, you have to say in the context of, well, you look beautiful, but I just, you know, that's not me personally. I don't love that hat. Or you could say, you know, which is what I'll say a lot is, you know, it's not my, I know, but I'm no expert on female clothes. You should really ask a friend of yours, maybe. Maybe they'll have a better sense of it. yeah, you know, sometimes that's important. Sometimes you have to know what questions not to answer. It's also important. exactly. Yeah.
Obviously, you have to be sensitive. Relationship is also trying to be honest but sensitive at the same time, so it's a tackle. So you want to be honest, right? You want to trust the person who's, and maybe she's really looking for that, like, hard truth on some level. So it's really about,
right, that's absolutely right.
You want to be sensitive about
it. Look, a lot of marriage is how you say things and the tone that you say them with. And, you know, I knew a couple where she was complaining that he never bought her gifts. Never buy me gifts. And he would travel a lot and go to these countries and he'd never come back with a gift for her. He'd go to Italy for 5 days or going to wherever. So one day he goes on a trip. He goes somewhere and he gets jewelry. And he comes home and he needs to come. Midnight, he gets lends like 70 and gets home. And he's got like a necklace and he throws it on the bed. I got you something. Right? And she said to him, and she was right, you idiot, like, you went to you did the right thing, but the tone was all off, and so forget it, the whole thing is ruined. And you can ruin the whole thing just with the wrong tone, just the wrong approach. Like, give it to her in a nice way, and include with it, I missed you while I was gone, and, you know, I was thinking of you, and I saw this necklace, and I just thought you'd love it, I hope you like it. You know, it's how you do it, there's so much, and with women, especially, you know, it's all tone. It's all setting a context. It's all setting a mood. And when you can do that, you've got a lot more freedom. When you can do the right thing and do it in the wrong way and forget it, it's as if you never did it at all. So you always have to be aware of that. Yeah, 100%. All right. Check what plans I have. All right, any questions about what I told the women? Now, I'm going to tell you, what, you know, what I reiterate to them as well is the need for couples to meet in the middle. That he's got to do a good job of understanding her emotional needs and trying to connect with her emotion. She has to realize that that's going to be hard for him. And she has to be as clear as possible. Now, I try to say to couples a lot is, you know, the modern day concept of, you know, they're not just my husband, they're my best friend. I think it's a very dangerous concept. Meaning, have a best friend. It's okay. Like, the sense that your spouse has to be everything for you, I think is a very dangerous concept, because it's a lot of expectation. It doesn't mean that you're not close. It doesn't mean they don't share. But you know, your spouse might not be the perfect person to fill every need in your life. Some needs, yes. Many needs, possibly. But not every single need. So, you know, I tell women and I tell men, like, you know, it's not, you know, you can have friendships outside of your relationship, and even very close friendships, and you might even have people you share things with that you don't share with your spouse. And as long as it's not something of a very, you know, sensitive nature, you know, then it's fine. You know, it's, and I think both sides have to realize that. And you have to kind of meet halfway. What? To be everything for them.
Most people don't really demand that their best friends feel everything.
Right, but nowadays there's this concept that your spouse and your best friend, as if they can do everything for you. I agree. So, but the thing, it's your spouse and your best friend, therefore it's everything.
I mean, the way I understand the statement that my spouse is my best friend is exactly the opposite of that. I relate to my spouse in the same way I relate to my best friend. We have differences, we have things in common.
Okay, I'm not sure that's how people mean it, but that's a better way to interpret it. I if that's what people mean, then that's great. The other thing that I brought up was, one second. What?
I'm starting to lecture.
To feed the ego?
I said, the woman is three A's. One of the A's were on that for men. Just feed their ego.
Well, I would say this. See, men, and this is on the guys, I think. So the sensitivity that men have is that they are sensitive to feeling like a failure, and the feeling they're being judged. And men, very often, women are critical, feel internally, well, she feels like I'm a failure. She feels like I'm an idiot. She feels like, and that becomes a
lack of respect.
It's a lack of respect, and now it's a lack of ego. I'm not competent. And for men, it's very important to be competent, to be productive, to be useful. So with women, I tell them, make sure to point out the good that he does as well as the bad, because if all you do, you know, the example I give is, you give him a list of 10 things to get from the store, and 9 are right and 1 is off. So if you come back and you thank him for the 9 things, say, oh, you know what, that one's a little bit off, but I see how you made that mistake, then fine, it's good. If you come back and say, I can't believe you got that one wrong, what kind of idiot are you? How hard is it to go to the supermarket? If that's what he hears, then A, what he really hears is, you're a failure, you're an idiot. Why did I ever marry you? Right? And women, I know, so women have to understand that men are sensitive to that, to feeling like an idiot, like a failure, and they'll often interpret what you're saying in that way. What men have to realize is that what women don't really mean that. That women will often use very strong language that they don't mean. Right? How come you never pick up your phone? How come you always, you know, leave your clothes on the floor? They use very strong language because it's an emotional language, because women live in the world of emotion. The reality is their emotion at that moment. And at that moment they feel, how come the last 5 times I tried to call him, he hasn't picked up? And therefore that emotion consumes him, and that becomes their reality. The reality is the emotion of, he never picks up. Because in their world right now, that's how they feel. So men have to learn not to take their language too literally. Because women will very often use language that is dramatic, to say the least. Yeah.
How much of these statements really are like gender specific? I mean, I know for myself that I'll also get emotional and use language that is...
For sure.
We're also afraid of failure.
Nothing is 100% gender specific. What I'm focusing on is tendencies or things that are more common one over the other. We're at 100%. Women have all sorts of fears that are similar to men, and vice versa. Nothing is, you know, I know couples where it's reversed, and the man is much more sensitive than the woman. Or the man wants to talk about his day more than she does. There's no hard and fast rules on this. But at the same time, we shouldn't ignore that there are certain realities that tend to be true. And everyone has to figure out for themselves, is this a reality or not? And apply it, you know, to the extent that they think needs to be applied. I'm just trying to lay out what, both from Torah sources and from, you know, marriage counselors and marriage therapists, what tends to be the advice given and what the research shows. That's what I'm trying. I'm trying to condense that into kind of 1 hour. But obviously it's much more complicated than that. Yeah. Okay. All right, we'll stop here. I guess